we're back with another episode of the Work Week After Hours. I am Shane Howard with my good friend Steve Cadigan. Steve, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well today. What do we got on tap, Shane?
I think we're going to dive into a little bit of healthy debate, kind of piggybacking off our last episode. I'm super, super interested in this whole thought process, which is kind of contradicting a lot of the big organizations that get paid a lot of money to make a lot of predictions. I actually don't believe that AI is going to take jobs and going to put people out of work and all these different things. I think it will to some extent, but at scale, it's going to add jobs. What we talked about last episode, I believe that AI is going to actually accelerate a better quality of work-life environment. And to kind of give a high-level view of my thoughts, and then I want to reference this article that came out, ironically, on Labor Day, is I believe that AI, I guess backing up, there's a billion and one studies that exist out there that show you only get less than 60% of actual work in a work day out of the 8 hours or 9 hours that an employee is actively engaged in their job. That's across the board in any country. It's pretty consistent with human existence. So I've always questioned, if you listen to this episode, there's numerous episodes of me questioning, then why are we making people sit for 8 hours a day doing work? If we know I'm not getting anything, and we know why, because it satisfies these, well, that's the way it's always, these sacred cows that exist within the world, right? So my thought process is AI is going to allow us to do more work in the same time period that we would do, right? So we know that the world is likely going to a different type of work or universal work schedule. I believe AI will accelerate that into a 4-day or 3-day work week. Now, I guess let me preface when I say that, because I've had some people I know personally kind of push back on this. I'm not saying that someone will not work 5 days a week. What I am saying is if Steve is at LinkedIn and Steve hires me to do job X, I'm only going to be contracted to work in my office 3 days a week, or from home, or from the beach, or from Carcavelos here in Lisbon, Portugal, 3 days a week. AI will allow me to be as productive as if I worked 5 days a week or 6 days a week. Those other 2 days will allow me to help fill the void of the talent deficiency that exists in the work world and pick up extra days, because companies will never be able to hire enough people to fill all the roles that they need to fix all these things, as Steve talks about a lot. So that's my belief. So I'm going to let you, now that we've had a week or so, Steve, I'll let you kind of give your thoughts. And then I have this article that I'd like to kind of reference and pull some things from and tee up for us to dive into a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, first I'd like to say that I would welcome that reality where it takes less time to do a task. I think one of the big limiters in realizing this is going to be let's just take the classic manager perspective or classic leader perspective on work, which is you are available to me, you work for me in this 9 to 5, 5 days a week, you know, whatever it is, okay? And I think that's going to be hard for people to reconcile. What the pandemic has revealed, and we haven't talked much about it, is a lot of leaders don't really know what their people are doing. And it's forced us to ask a really great question. Well, what is work? What is the expected outcome? And that's a really good, healthy thing for us to be experiencing. So we should know what that is. And I know a lot of our listeners, you may be thinking, oh, you mean companies don't really know what they're doing? Trust me, they don't. They generally have an idea, like, I need this to get to be completed. But most leaders and managers that I work with will know what needs to be done and how it needs to be done. Like, you need to do this, and you need to do this first, and then that second. There's very few that are like, just get this done, okay? I think another challenge with this shorter period of work, Shane, is that rewards and jobs and careers and ladders and organizations were built with a model of this amount of time, this many days per week. That's what we're paying you for. Not just get this done, right? And I love the fact that you're coming at this from, you know, a very unique perspective, which informs, I think, greater discussions for us and greater debates, as you said. But the, you know, the world that I'm seeing is like, we're paying you to be here, be available in this block of time, not always get this done. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not trying to defend it. But as you say, you know, is AI already providing opportunities for things to be done more efficiently? Heck yeah. So how are we going to make that leap? You know, that's going to result in time that's, I guess, not earmarked for anything yet.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, Steve knows, but a lot, I guess a gift I have, or a superpower, I guess I have, is I know how to like connect the dots. I can see trends and kind of connect the dot. So it's actually kudos to you, Steve, and a lot of the information and stories that you've shared with me that have existed in like the war wounds and the war stories of recruiting and finding talent in Silicon Valley. Companies know. So we talked about this when the pandemic hit, of everybody's working from home now. So your competitive advantage now is no longer your fancy office. It's no like these things go away, right? Companies now have less and less of what I call a competitive advantage in recruiting, right? Because studies have now shown that people will work less, they'll make less money to be more, have more joy in their life. Not necessarily related to work, but just be overall a better quality of life, right? So my belief is the only competitive advantage you have is time. That's all any of us have. So the world, as a consumer, we've been manipulated as a consumer. And I say manipulated, I don't mean it to be that harsh, but what happened was businesses and innovation evolved to give me as the consumer more time, right? LinkedIn is given to recruiters who need more time, right? Can you imagine recruiting in today's world without LinkedIn? It would be an absolute nightmare, right? So the world shifted, and maybe this is a part of the pandemic. Maybe this is a part of what's happened. Maybe accelerated it. But I believe, and I've talked about this on previous episodes, I believe the power and the leverage has changed. Even though you can read headlines right now, the leverage is gone with the individual contributor, employees no longer have leverage. That's because I don't know that they understand the leverage that they have. And I understand it's corporations' job to mask that some. I understand business. I'm a business owner. I get it. But what I think is the reality is I as the consumer, so the employee is the consumer now, right? It's shifted. Mm-hmm. It's now shifted in that role. So the only advantage you can have by getting the best talent is you have to start being creative. Eventually, remote work or flex work at scale isn't going to be your competitive advantage anymore. Innovation still has to happen within the world of hiring and talent and all these different things. And what is that going to be? AI, I believe, gives you that advantage. AI, I believe, and maybe it doesn't exist, maybe the proper technology doesn't exist, but it is soon coming to where you will be able to say, Steve, I need you to come and be my CHRO. Great part about it is I only need you 2.5 days a week. And maybe I just need you to be available by email on Fridays, right, or on Thursdays. Right, mm-hmm. I just need you on Slack or available on email. I don't need you to work in. I don't need to be reactive, not proactive. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden, if you say, "Oh, wait a second, I can still get the same compensation. I can get the same benefits. I can get the same equity. I can get the same different things. It's like, oh, wait a second. I can go do this. Now, for those people who really want to drive and you really want to do that and you want to go pick up a side job being a fractional CHRO somewhere else for those 2.5 days, kudos to you. That's great. That's your choice. Like, that's a choice mm-hmm. that you have. But I believe that AI is giving us the flexibility to say, I want you to have a better life, right? And you and I have talked about this. We do this with the consumer. I've talked a lot about this, and I think we talked about KPIs and the KPIs we track. We every organization knows all their sales KPIs. They know all their personas. Mm-hmm. They know exactly mm-hmm. who their target customer is, but most of them have no idea who their target employee, you know, potential employee is for a certain role. They can't identify it, right? So I think the world, in the world of business and work, it's shifting, but no one is comfortable enough to stop the spinning ball and say, what's happening here? Because what's happening here is the trends that we have, it's okay for me to have someone do the job because I just want you to do the job. I'm mm-hmm. not concerned that you're sitting in my office. What, imagine the operational costs go down if 2 days a week, everybody's in your office 2 days a week, or everybody's mm-hmm. working 2 days a week, everybody's in your building 2 days less a week, right? It's massive. So that's where it comes from. I believe that there is a shift, and I know a lot of people, and you know your favorite. Your favorite thought leader in this world, Jamie Dimon, has a different approach and has a different view and these different yeah. things. But I believe that there's a shift here. I believe.
Yeah. I got a lot of thoughts and a lot of different directions we could go in. I think I'm first going to say there are, and I'm playing devil's advocate because I would like this to happen, sure. but let's just talk about the world of that you're describing is more of us could have more roles at the same time. We don't have to have necessarily one employer. And that gets into challenging how you get a home mortgage, challenging how you get credit history, challenging how you get bank account. I mean, the system, you know, global economic systems have largely been built for you to have an employer. And so we're going to have to revisit some of that stuff. And we have seen enormous change in some political channels. The war in the Ukraine accelerated Germany, for example, Germany's shift to fossil-free energy. So that's amazing. That was politically suicide of people because it was going to cost so much. And now they saw the war. They said, yeah, we need to decrease our dependence on foreign oil. Yeah, we're going to go all into clean energy. Boom. And I think that's where the pain point's going to come is economies are going to get hurt. They're going to have to be more thoughtful and creative. And they're going to have to reconcile that. Here's where I want to go to on a very practical level, Shane. Who owns implementing AI in a company? Let's say, 500 person, 1,000 person, 10,000, like who is the AI concierge? Is it every employee? It's on you? Or like, how is that coming at us? Because we got this big monster and we all kind of, everyone I talk to, Shane, by the way, describes AI differently. I took my crack at it on our last episode. Audience, feel free to send us yours. I don't know if there's a right or wrong, but the point is we don't have a shared understanding of what that is right now. I was talking to a good friend of mine the other day, Stacia Garr. She's the CEO of her own HR research company. And somehow this conversation turned towards Stacia, everyone's asked me about AI. Like, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? And that's when she asked me what I just threw out for us to discuss was something I hadn't considered, which is how should organizations, quote organizations, our organizations implementing that. Huge news yesterday out of the largest employer in America outside of the military and the government, Walmart, is apparently giving every one of their, quote, office employees, that tells you something that they still call them office employees, that's Walmart, they're getting a generative AI app, apparently, to load and fill an experiment to find ways of making them more effective and more efficient. That, to me, Shane, is a shot across the bow, like, poof, like, okay, those guys in Arkansas are like, hey, we got to try this out. And they, you know, when you're that big and you have, you know, that much of an influence in the economy, people pay attention. Definitely got my attention. But, you know, let's just go back to the original question. Like, how do you, what are your thoughts on that? Are you seeing anything? Like, what would your recommendation be?
So somebody asked me this. I got a friend working on an AI company and we were talking, and it just so happens he's thinking about starting a company in the AI space, and it solves some problems, or potentially solves some problems of a lot of things you and I talk about, and you know, you can tell he doesn't work in this space. So I was giving him some feedback, and I was like, hey, he's like, oh, well, you know, employees will just go and they'll implement this. And I was like, no, ain't gonna happen. He's like, well, middle managers. I was like, no, ain't gonna happen. Like, there is not a C-suite executive would allow that to be signed off. No way, it's not gonna happen. So, I believe, again, and we've talked a lot about this. The world of HR and leadership is becoming a lot more, you know, melted together, if you will. But I believe it will probably fall, just because of the way things go, it'll probably fall on the HR department. But I think the HR will have you'll have a different type of CHRO. You'll have a CHRO for like your employee people practices and your day-to-day stuff that happens that you have to make like, you know, on the spot decisions and human decisions. And I think you'll have a chief human resource technology officer, or something of that nature, people technology officer, or something along those lines. But
you could make an argument that it fits in IT. You could make an argument that, hey, HR, you don't own the work getting done. You own getting me good people. You own helping me evaluate them, helping me coach them. What do you know about AI? Who's given you the ball to run with that one? IT by birthright has like, hey, we've got the resources, but they've usually been niche. It's a tool in your holster, not the gateway to full greater productivity. I mean, sure. You know, whether it was, you know, I remember when Lotus Notes was implemented at a company I was working for in the 80s. And I remember growing up using WordPerfect and Lotus 1-2-3. So now, you know, managers traditionally have been the one like, I'm responsible for getting my team to produce an output. That's why I think you're giving a lot of respect and deference to HR. So my influence is rubbing off on you more than it should, but go ahead.
Well, so AI is a technology, right?
Is it a technology?
I'm putting AI in the world of technology. Meaning, I'm saying it's a tool. It's a tool to do your job, right? Like if it's
tools, kind of an understatement. Yeah, it's you could call it so much, but it is right. It's a productivity like accelerator of epic proportions.
I don't think HR owns it. I think HR owns the implementation of it, or maybe not even the implementation.
The accountability for leaders to have a plan.
Yes. So where my brain goes to is, I've never worked in a big company, but the HR tools that exist, you're getting a computer and you're getting a company cell phone and you're getting these things, HR oversees that. I'm sure IT goes and sets that up and, you know, they roll it out, but HR decides this tool is adequate for this part. Like, I know I'm generalizing, but I guess maybe that's why my brain is influenced to maybe go there. Ironically, you named and what you said, and I'm sure this will certainly rub a few people wrong. You said all these other different departments, right? Like why doesn't your chief revenue officer have say so in the AI that gets rolled out within sales, right? Why doesn't this is maybe in your field, right? In your expertise, in your domain, it's a new skill that you're going to have to learn. You're going to have to learn how to manage people, but also manage AI that manages people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe that's the piece of it, or ultimately it falls on the person who oversees all of that. And it is the CEO, and he has to learn these things. Mm-hmm. If I'm a CEO of a company, I want to know all about it. Feed me, let me sit in on as many meetings about this as possible, because I want to understand exactly what mm-hmm. I'm giving control of my company to. That's right. And I'm pro technology. I'm pro technology.
Yeah. So I was telling you off air, I had a chance to go visit some friends at some VCs and some private equity last week. I don't normally do it. I've started to rehabilitate my actual meeting with people in person. It's been fun. Everyone that I'm talking to, this is occupying a significant amount of mind share. And I think the smaller, earlier stage companies are going to have an easier time, like any new technology change, adopting this, because they're going to build it with this in mind. For example, one firm I was speaking with said, we require everyone we invest in to have an AI strategy, and we want to know what that is. And they're seeing all kinds of efficiencies be created. It's the bigger firms, the Walmarts of the world, that are going to really have to, you know, face this. And for human resources, I mean, we can talk about the implementation. There's other huge implications, like there's two classes of employees generally under the Fair Labor Standard Act. There's exempt employees, which is just get the work done. And then there's hourly. People paid by the hour to get something done. I wonder, because those jobs could really benefit in many cases from AI, how that's going to put pressure on how they're rewarded on an hourly basis. You know, like we used to joke, you know, when you used to drive by construction workers on the side of the road and they're just like sitting around doing nothing, and you go, oh, they're definitely getting paid by the hour.
Paid employees.
Which is not fair because we don't know, you know, all the stories there. Or you see guys working on the weekends and holidays and going, oh, they're getting paid to get this done early. There's not an hourly thing going on here. Yeah. So that's one of those small but massive changes to the ecosystem of regulation that's going to have pressure put on it, you know?
Yeah. So what sparked this for me, for us to talk about this? And this personally is completely new information for me. I did not know this, but it's an article that came out in the Vancouver Sun three days ago mm-hmm. on Labor Day, but it's about a company in New Zealand. So off air, I'm going to dive into this a little bit more. Right.
It wasn't Labor Day. It's about an organization.
It's an organization called the 4-Day Week Global. Have you heard of this?
No.
I have not heard of this. How does it work? Employees receive 100% pay, 80% time worked, and 100% productivity targets achieved. Now.
Say that again, Shane.
Okay. Employees receive 100% pay, they work 80% of the time, and the goal is to achieve 100% productivity, meaning 100% of a 100% full 40-hour work week. Period.
Well, just how they're defining that is interesting to me. 80% of the time, meaning the time that they normally would have worked.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right.
So the 100-80-100, it's trademarked, principle was developed by our leaders, Charlotte Lockhart and Andrew Barnes. Probably going to reach out to them. Would love to have them as a guest. After mm-hmm. they successfully piloted a 4-day week in their business. There's an article. It started in 2018. So it started pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. It has become an international standard to help businesses formulate a fair and flexible pathway to reducing work time for their employees, no matter how many hours they work currently. It was developed in response to the need to accommodate a meaningful reduction in work for staff who work non-standard hours, either part-time or regular hours of overtime. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, what I find really interesting is in this article, it talks about and this is 2023 for those if you listening in the future, and it's 2040 and you're listening to us. In July, the nonprofit released a report that analyzed the outcomes of year-long pilot projects run by 41 companies in the United States and Canada. At the end of the year, 90% of the companies plan to continue the 4-day week, with the rest leaning towards continuing. No organization in the study expressed a desire or to return to 5 days. It found employees of these companies worked an average of 40 hours a week before the project began. A year later, they were doing the same job for the same pay in just over 35 hours. More than two-thirds of staff said they had fewer, and this is the other piece of what I think is going to drive this. They had fewer job-related burnouts, and 6 out of every 10 reported fewer conflicts at work and at home. So kind of bounce back to where we're at, it's not only do I have the power to do this, it's you're going to need to, because we're dealing with populations in countries who have a declining mm-hmm. population. They have a net loss in births and those different things. So the only way to do this, now I'm going to flip and add a different piece to this that we haven't, but the only way to do this, the only way to solve this is to have people work longer. It's the only way, right? It like you're in the workforce longer. That means you have to be healthier. That means my quality of life has to improve. That also means we have to change the standardized, and we did talk about this in a previous episode, we have to change the standardized retirement, right? So, you know, mm-hmm. though that's out of date too. We're mm-hmm. we're living much longer than when that was put in place, and right. and people working would be pissed. But I would argue that most people working would, instead of retiring at 60, would say, "I'll retire at 67 if I only have to work 2.5-3 days a week." I guarantee you they would, right? Because now I have a longer steady flow of income. I know I have more money coming in as I get older in my life, and I have a better quality of life, and I can enjoy more of my good years now, right? So what's interesting in this is that employers rated the impact of pilot projects 8.7 out of 10 for attracting new employees and 7.7 out of 10 for both their workers, productivity, and performance. What I'd like to know, and one of the questions we got to remember when we talk to these people, is I want to know the data reflecting off of retaining employees, because you get asked on a daily basis, what can I do to keep my people here longer, right? Mm-hmm. That is, you are asked that on every single day, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And if you can start to show quantifiable things that say, hey, get innovative. So I talked about, I think it's your competitive advantage to recruit. Maybe it's your competitive advantage to retain. And that's an interesting thing. Go ahead. I'm gonna zip back into this if you want to volley off of that a little bit, and then there's some other pieces in here I want to share.
Okay. Well, while you were doing that, I was reminded of a study that was just completed in the UK. 61 companies between June and December of 2022 participated in a 4-day work week to shockingly positive results. They said, you know, cases of burnout down dramatically. People felt way more life productivity, and the majority of those 61 companies that did this are continuing to do it. And guess what? They're having a much easier time recruiting and retaining when they have this short period of time that they've since they've, you know, gone full time since December. And that's really, really interesting. Now, was that driven by AI? I don't know. I think it was driven by burnout and concerns of mental wellness. And they're not, you know, they're all connected in some way, I'm sure. But that's an interesting validation for the points that you're making, where I think we've hit a point of recognition. Mm-hmm.
So that study was this company. They did, okay. They did a test. I'm reading the research now. They did one in the U.S. and Ireland. They did one in the U.K. and they did one in Australia as well. And in Australia, it's pretty consistent with what they did. One mm-hmm. of the interesting things from this article, there's two really interesting things. One of the companies that said they wouldn't be doing it. Instead, it decided it implemented a flexible work environment that allows employees to take time to pick up children or run errands during the week, and it has made Friday a floating day. It's not a weekday with scheduled meetings, and it's not part of the weekend when people can get caught up on work or kick off early. Even though we didn't end up sticking with a strict 4-day work week, our company culture and our product are really aligned with that vision. It's really a reduced working hours movement. It's connected to the idea that it's not the number of hours we work, but what we get done or achieve that matters. Massive, massive implications. Right. And then there's another piece in there where what's the benefit for a company, right? What, how do we incentivize company owner X to do this, right? So there's a province, and I can't find the name of the province in Canada that offered up tax breaks to encourage companies to do a 32-hour work week project. Mm-hmm. So it was, and I guess a Maryland instituted a new bill recently that's doing this.
Okay.
British Columbia, so Victoria, British Columbia, is the 4-day, 32-hour week. It is, and it's a 3-year pilot of shortened work week incentive by tax break for businesses, similar to the proposed bill in the state of Maryland. As a part of the pilot, businesses would be required to report data to the province to better determine how to balance reduced work hours and maintain the same rate of pay with benchmarks like productivity, employee well-being, and employer satisfaction. The government is to publish interim reports of the data and findings of the pilot every year, with the final report to be made at the conclusion of the pilot, and it goes on to other things. Mm-hmm. When these things are happening, we're on to something, right? When places are saying, hey, we're willing to give up tax breaks because we see the overall benefit to the residents of our mm-hmm. environment, to me, like this for me is, I'm going down a whole rabbit hole now. Now I'm really feeling it, because I where there's smoke, there's fire, right? And yeah, I could rant. I don't want to hog up all the airtime, but I could rant about this and why I believe in it. But
what you're alluding to is what Malcolm Gladwell calls the tipping point of change. You know, if there's a big change in anything, it's never a thing. It's hundreds of things happening in small pieces that are turning the trajectory of our relationship to work, and the ripple effects that go along with those too. So yeah, it's encouraging. You know, I think it'd be great to hear from our audience, you know, what they're seeing, what they're trying, what they're hearing. Some of the big companies of late have been really in a back to the office, which seems to be showcasing a lack of flexibility. Yep. Which is surprising to me. What the study also said, and I think you pointed this out, and if you did, I just want to reinforce it, that the profits of the companies that implemented this 4-day work week were significantly increased. And that's worth paying attention to, right?
So I'm going to bounce around, because this data to me says a lot. Australia, they observed 44% average reduction in absenteeism and a 9% reduction in resignations over the course of the pilot. Employees' outcomes were similarly positive, with 96% wanting to continue their four-day week post-trial when asked much additional pay they required in their next job to go back to 5 days. Over 1 in 3 said between 26 and 50% more, with over 1 in 10 stating no amount of money would induce them to go back to working 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we're going to dive into this. I think you and I need to dive into this data a little bit, and I'd love to have these people on, because I got a lot of questions. Overall report, the global report that sparked this article, Kickstarter was one of the companies that did this.
Mm.
So John Leland, the chief strategy officer at Kickstarter, they implemented it in 2021. The most profound impact was employee retention. We've seen very few people choose to depart the company since the implementation of our 4-day work week. This has dramatically improved our ability to meet objectives and key results every quarter. While we were lucky to hit 70% prior to our pilot, we now hit more than 90% productivity. It's easy to think that a company might have to sacrifice some ambition to implement a 4-day work week, but we have only increased the scale of our ambition since its adoption. Yeah. Massive.
Believers. Mm-hmm.
Massive.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I don't, is it believers that, you know, like data, right? Data causes informed decisions, right? And there's only, I mean, it talks about a year after launching their trials, employees' average work week dropped from a baseline of 38 hours to 32.97 hours, down almost a full hour from the 6-month mark. Yeah, I think, I'd love to hear from somebody, if anybody knows anybody who actually has data to show me the other way, because that's what will happen. And I'm like that. I think that will be, you know, the driving force. But mm-hmm. I'd love to hear from anybody who has data showing the opposite, right? Show me where a pilot, you know, because it can be a controlled thing. I get it. Mm-hmm. But it's a nonprofit to become the global standard. It's not like somebody's out here trying to become a billionaire off of the, you know, off of this standard. It's a nonprofit that's trying to create regulation around creating a better way of life for people. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's not how they word it, because I know they're trying to.
Yeah. Hey Shane, when you play this out in your head, or when you're looking at some of these articles, do you see a future where the weekend is now 3 days, or do you see a future where the weekend's still 2 days, but everyone has more freedom within the 5 quote working days than before? Like, do you see more fluidity in how this gets arranged, or do you think, oh yeah, we're gonna have another? Because most of the companies that have gone hybrid, if you ask anyone, the office is empty Monday and Friday, and it's more filled Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right? So, yep. And I, you know, having, you know, those shortened weeks, my boys have 2 weeks of school where they're Mondays off, and it's just like they're just lighting up like a Christmas tree, you know? But I wonder how that plays out, because there are lots of things like schools, public services, frontline workers, you know, do frontline workers get the 4-day work week? Like, how does that, you know, how does that play?
So AI in its physical form or implemented code algorithm form is going to impact, you know, I think we talked about it before we moved to Portugal. My son was working at McDonald's, and, you know, he was like, hit me. I was like, wait a second, something. Why am I not hearing about this? He's like, I'm running the drive through. I was like, oh, I went to the drive through. He wasn't there. He's like, no. I work on one of the computers in, you know, at the counter. And I was like, wait a second, you don't even interact. So I start doing some research, and they're actually test driving models to where someone can sit at home, and they have a program to where they can actually run 3 or 4 different drive-thrus at one time from their home. So it's less employees kind of thing. And it got me to think, like, wait a second.
Less space they need in the restaurant, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, less of a footprint on the real estate. So
smaller footprint, smaller risk. Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Less energy costs, less insurance and liability costs. Like, all these things start to go down. So it got me thinking, wait a second. Every place is going to, I'm looking at getting a surgery, an elective surgery done here, and it's done by a robot. There is a human that oversees it, but it's done by a robot, which means 20 years from now, it's just going to be done by a robot. It's not, the human is not going to be standing there with it on the controls, right? Like, technology is going to advance that fast in 20 years. So I frontline workers. Yeah, I mean, let me ask you this. So this could be a bit of a sore spot for some of the people, but
better not be about an airline. Go ahead.
No. Frontline workers. We'll say healthcare. Healthcare right now is working with massive deficiencies in number of people to do the actual job. Right? Burnout. Crazy hours, all these different things. Mm-hmm. What if you go to a three? Do you think some of these hospitals that we've talked to, would have as hard of a time recruiting if they said, hey, we're going to pay the same amount, but you only got to work 3 days a week instead of 5.5. Now, I know you got to do numbers and payroll and all those different things, but instantly you can become the cream of the crop in offering a service.
Mm-hmm.
In healthcare in America, because it's not free, you will absolutely pay for better quality, right? If there is a demographic that will pay for better quality, right? It's not that you get bad quality at the other, it's you'll pay, right? And here in Portugal, I pay to go to a private hospital. It is like walking into a 5-star hotel. And so I think it will. I think these things exist. But I will also say, everybody, there's jobs all around the world that are doing something that somebody doesn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That will always exist, right? I used to joke, somebody's got to pick up my garbage. I don't want to be a garbage man. Somebody's got to pick up my garbage. And then you find out, garbage men actually make pretty good money and they're off by 2 o'clock every day. They make good money, right? So somebody's got to do it. I just don't want to do it, right? But somebody is okay with doing it. We're all different people.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody likes chocolate or vanilla ice cream. Some people like orange sherbet. Some people like strawberry, you know, these different things. So I think that debate is never set well with me. It's like, yeah, but nobody ever loves to do everything. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
I got a great story for you. I don't think shared this with you offline. So one of my biggest frustrations as an independent business person in the States is trying to find affordable medical care. So I'm on my third plan now in the last 10 years that I'm trying out, and or fourth plan, I should say. This plan has a unique stipulation. If I go to urgent care without ever calling a doctor first to try to get my issues sorted, I'm going to pay a lot more if I just show up. If I call someone and then they send me to urgent care, I pay nothing. They're trying to condition me to leverage a more distributed model where they don't have people. I don't think I'm talking to a doctor or a nurse in a facility. I think they're at home. And I don't necessarily have an issue with that. I'm just not conditioned to think that way. So we didn't have time this morning. My wife and I were making plans to talk to our insurance broker to say, explain this to us again. Like, give us the cheat sheet. Like, when do we call, like, for the dermatologist? That's like regular care. Do I just show up or do I have to call someone to say, I need a regular skin, because we both had mild cases of melanoma in our history, so we have to do this really regularly, right? And all my family have had all kinds of skin cancer stuff. So it's just, that's interesting to me that they, an insurance provider, and if I use it the way they want me to use it, it's going to cost me a lot less. My initial reaction is, this is weird. I'm not used to calling someone before I go in, you know?
Yeah. So I think this often sometimes gets lost in this conversation when everyone talks about, yeah, but like they do everybody, I've done it too. What about frontline workers? What about this thing? In having the conversation, we have to realize that not just what we're talking about in AI and technology is going to advance. For example, and two things actually came to me. One, the new iOS is coming out on the new iPhone. AI medical is one of the most accurate things ever created by mankind, right? And the reason that is because when something is quantifiably wrong, so cancer, for skin cancer, a mole that is potentially cancerous, it is unbelievably identifiable. Different.
Right, if my phone can identify a bird from 75 feet, it should be able to identify skin cancer with a picture.
It can. So the new iOS will have the ability for you to scan moles, and it will flag if you need to go get one checked out. So it is coming. So next week, you'll be able to try this out. You can also do plants. You can do berries and different things so you don't die and, you know, all these different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what we live in a world now where the Jetsons 40 years ago, we could talk about this cartoon and say, oh, what if this stuff exists kind of thing. We're going to have devices where you're going to put something on your head, you're going to put something around your abdomen, you're going to put your hands in something, you're going to set your feet on something, and you're going to say, I don't feel good. And the algorithm's going to run these things, and it's going to say, oh, there's a 90% chance that you have this. We need to contact a doctor. A doctor's going to come on. Doctor's going to call you. Your appointment's going to be scheduled. A doctor's not even going to be sitting in the office every day. They're going to say, oh, okay, yeah, looks like this. Looks like this. Okay, yeah, we need to get you in. Actually, do you have this symptom? Because we can't, like, the system won't pull this. But are you also feeling this? Yeah, you are. Yeah, let's go ahead and get you into a hospital. Let's get you checked out. What does that do? If we can reduce the amount of people overflowing into the world of medical, into that environment, into that doctor's offices or urgent cares or ERs or hospitals in general, it causes the cost to go down mm-hmm. because we're running less tests. And not only that, it becomes more accurate. It becomes more consistent, right? Now I have a consistent doctor that's algorithm is only based off of the medical world, the medical database that exists, and my information. That's it. It's not influenced by what's going on in their home life. It's not influenced whether or not somebody just T-boned his car before he came into work. It's not influenced by that. So I believe that you're going to need a different type of frontline worker who will be able to do the job 3 days a week. I believe that. I believe that's where we're going. And I think it's just one of those things that, you know, when you look, when you look at these things and the data that shows that I can get, we have a mental health crisis. People have never been more stressed out, and you can attribute it to politics and world wars and all these different things. Doesn't matter. You still do talk a lot about this when you and I first got together. Is there are more things externally outside of the workplace mm-hmm. impacting and influencing someone who works for you than ever before. So the only way to reduce. So one of the things that it said in this study, it says crucially, the reduction was not achieved via increased work intensity, where people had to speed up and cram 5 days of tasks into 4. Instead, they operated more efficiently and continued to improve those capabilities as the year progressed. And they self-rated physical and mental health measures improved over 12 months, with employees also reported increased work-life balance scores. We've been trying to fix this model, and we've increased more, you know, this thing about employee engagement, and it's this, and it's never moved. The needle's never moved, but we've continued to add more and more and more and more and more on the plate. More hours, more this, more productivity. Let's take it back. I'd love to see employee engagement scores aligned as a standard with this as well, and see what those benchmarks are. Let's see if that number is skewed over, right? These different things. So I believe in this, bro. I believe in it.
Well, like we've talked about before, we need some new measures for work. We need some new measures for what engagement is. Is it really a meaningful measure? And now we're all trying to build new frameworks for, you know, what is the work that's being done and what's really the necessary time involvement. I don't know that everyone's ready to do what I believe needs to be done, which is, yeah, what we've been doing is too much. I don't know what the right amount is, but it's not what we've been doing, you know? And I'm one of those people, and you are too, Shane, that we drove ourselves right over a cliff in terms of working way more. And we paid a health tax with that. And that's, you know, a lot of people ride that train. They start, the water starts boiling. You don't know it. The next thing you know, some part of you stops working, you know? And so it's definitely real. And, you know, I've said this before, talking to a lot of my colleagues around the world, the mental health crisis has gone from not even on the radar 5 years ago to top of the list of priorities that I think smart, intelligent companies are really paying attention to. Do I think we have the right understanding of what we need to do yet? No, but I think we're making it more of a priority, and that's a good first start. A lot of the companies that I see that pitch me that are in this space seem to be serving up aspirin, not solution, you know, addressing the real problem. So, but it's a good start. Like, yes, I want to do something. Is that the right one? No. You know, little micro meditation things. No, that's not addressing the fact that they need to micro meditate. Like, no, there's something else driving it, which is, you know, in part, you know, significantly driven by the amount of time that we're not doing other things. The other thing, and this is something that I'm starting to dive in more in the my second book that I'm architecting right now, which is the study of brains in psychology, is revealing that doing different things produces greater creativity and innovation, and more sleep produces greater creativity and innovation. And that's just counter to the grinded culture, you know, that many of us were told by our parents with good intention.
So, yeah, yeah. Also, earmark, I think that was the topic we were looking, we were talking about.
Okay. Before.
That was our topic.
That was so, it.
Yeah, they found it. It finally came out.
We stumbled onto it. Awesome.
Yeah. So wildly enough, four day work week, 3 day work week takes off. If I can work and produce the same by working less, can I learn and grow the same by less days in a classroom, right? How does the education? It's a whole another topic, but that's where my brain goes of how does this connect?
I mean, that's not a question. The answer is yes, 100%.
Yeah.
Right? 100%. Yeah. It frees you up to do that, you know? I find myself, you know, and this is sort of a personal confession, I find myself over the last 10 years having it be harder for me to focus reading a book, because it's spending a lot of time. And the pandemic got me back into book consumption mainly through Audible, which I'd never really done at scale before. Riding in a car between my home in San Diego and San Francisco, a lot of time, great. And then my mom sent me a really great book called The Boat. It's about the Olympic rowing team at the University of Washington back in the 40s. Phenomenal, phenomenal read. She's like, you're going to love this. She was right. And I think that there is a battle for our attention right now that we have to take control over. Because if you just sit back, one of my boys did something which really surprised me, made me really proud, but also sort of made me nervous. I said, did you see that thing on TikTok? He goes, I've taken TikTok off my phone. I go, why'd you do that for? He goes, I was spending too much time on it. I go, that's my boy.
Yeah.
And so there was a recognition there that, hey, we have so many means to distract us from quieter moments, you know? And there's another thing. There's a lot of studies around being around water, bodies of water, very healing. Being in nature, very, very healing. And we were not built to be in buildings, you know? We weren't built to wear clothes, you know, and all these things. And so I think hopefully what this moment in time is going to give us is a sort of like, let's get back to basics here, because there's a lot of beauty that we've been given, and I think maybe we're missing out on some of it.
Potential little side helpful tip for those that have listened this far. You all probably fly on planes fairly regularly and do different things. A little something I learned, kind of similar to what Steve was talking about around being certain things weren't meant to be in buildings. There's something called grounding. And if you hold, I don't know what it is, but a tool that gauges with the two different prongs that gauges electricity current. If I sit here at my desk and I hold those, there's a natural current, because I'm sitting next to electronics, there's a natural current that's running through my body. if I get up holding those things and I walk out barefoot and I put my two bare feet on the ground in grass, there is no current that is running through my body. So there's these different studies that are being done on inflammation and how these different things. You actually can make a mat that you put on your feet where you sit at your desk, and it plugs in and it runs a negative current, so it doesn't run. It takes the current away from your body. And there's actually a mat you can sleep on. You put it underneath your mattress and you sleep on it, and it does the same thing while you sleep, so there aren't these currents running through your body. So Whoa. Maybe completely snake oil. I just know that all my travels to Australia and New Zealand, when I would come home and I'd get home at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night after traveling for 37 hours, before I would do anything, I would take my socks and shoes off, no matter if it's freezing cold outside, no matter what it was. I would go outside and I would walk around in the grass for 15, 20 minutes without my phone. Maybe it was right. Placebo effect, but mm-hmm. it worked for me. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Man, what an episode. Well,
I know, we wandered a lot of places here. Mm-hmm.
But I think this is a conversation we need to carry offline into a few other things that we're working with, because there's some crossover into some things that, I think we as a society are on to something, and I think it's this is one of those things that requires real attention and real understanding and some really brave people to kind of be willing to take a risk and be a first mover and be a pioneer in something that's going to come. We all play a part. Life on Earth is this one big experiment, and the more we can experiment, the more we can learn and try to create a better way of life for all of us. So
yeah, and let's bring on some of those people that you mentioned, Shane, to inform us so we can learn from, and our audience can, that are really way out in front on this one. And I think we'll have some fun with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. Another great episode.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks everybody for joining us here on another episode of the Work Week After Hours. Season 2, if you've gotten this far, you know that we have some razzle dazzle in the front of every episode now, a little, some cool tunes. I hope that inspires you to be excited about the content, and we're looking forward to getting back to you real soon.
Yeah. Shout out to our new team member, Uriel Padilla, for helping us out, for playing behind the scenes. So shout out to him.
I'm going to have to pull the curtain back at some point and have him in the lion's den with us, Shane.
Expose him to the world. We'll just black out his screen. It'll just be kind of like Joe Rogan's guy, where he's just on the back. And you don't actually see the guy. You just hear him talk and kind of come in. So
great.
Good stuff. We'll catch you next time, guys.